Hi, my name's Matthew Mousley, and I'm here with Sandra Jeske. We're lawyers at Duane Morris, which is a full-service firm with more than 20 offices in the United States and a few offices internationally. Today, we're here to provide an overview of security laws in the United States. Now, like privacy laws, security laws are industry-specific and data-specific to some extent as well. I know that there are a number of federal laws that generally govern businesses' obligations in terms of security. But we're going to begin our discussion with a brief overview of security breach notification laws.
Thanks, Matt. We don't yet have a federal statute addressing security breach notification, although it is anticipated that one may be coming later in 2010, which would set a national standard for the protection of consumers' personal information, such as credit cards and social security numbers. Basically, under that legislation, companies that handle sensitive data would be required to implement a data security program and notify persons affected by a data breach.
Now, I know that we've had similar legislation that's died in previous two Congresses without ever making it to the floor, but we're hopeful that perhaps with this bill we'll be able to make some further progress and actually have something that we can talk about in the future. In terms of state security breach notification statutes, right now there are 45 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands that have enacted legislation requiring notification of security breaches involving personal information. Now, of course, each state law governs the data of its citizens, and the laws are quite different and pose varying requirements on businesses that may have suffered a data breach. Assuming a business holds personally identifiable data from citizens of numerous states, how do you address these various state laws?
Well, from my view, Matt, businesses need to look at what I refer to as the greatest common denominator. In other words, even before a breach occurs, they need to comply with the most aggressive and demanding law in the books to ensure that they are fully compliant with all of the states as well as the federal statutes. In order to ensure appropriate compliance for our clients, we've developed a spreadsheet of the various laws which outlines the requirements of each, because when a breach happens, and trust me, it will happen, they need to be ready.
Okay. Now, I know that many businesses wrongly assume that data security programs are appropriately handled by software or firewalls or other technological means within the information securities department of their business. Other businesses were also wrongly assume that they don't need to comply because they don't collect consumer data. And I know from just talking with you, Sandy, that these are faulty assumptions that can lead to significant exposure. Now let's turn to two recent laws that require businesses to take proactive steps to create security programs to protect certain sensitive data and protect this such data against identity theft. The first that we'll talk about is the Massachusetts Data Security Regulation that mandates that anyone who maintains or licenses personal information of any Massachusetts resident, so for example employees, customers, students, patients, investors, develop, implement, and maintain a comprehensive information security program to safeguard that information.
Matt, the Massachusetts data security regulations are very strict. In fact, they require every person that owns or licenses personal information about a resident of Massachusetts to develop, implement, and maintain a comprehensive written information security program. Now, the program itself must contain administrative, technical, and physical safeguards that are appropriate to the size, scope, and type of business that the person's obligated to safeguard that personal information. It also depends on the amount of resources available to that person or business and the amount of stored data and the need for security and confidentiality of both the consumer and the employee information. Most importantly, it covers both paper and electronic records, and it includes an affirmative encryption requirement. Now, adequate compliance with this new regulation really is going to require time and effort.
Another law that's significant right now is the FTC's red flag identity theft rules, which the FTC has repeatedly delayed in its enforcement. Let's turn to a discussion of those rules. What can you tell us about those, Sandy?
Well, the red flag identity theft rules require financial institution and creditors with quote-unquote covered accounts, as the FTC has defined them, to formulate and implement an identity theft prevention program. Now, the determination of whether a business or an organization is covered by the red flag rules isn't really based on the industry or sector, as the language would suggest, but in fact, it's really based more on whether your activities fall within the relevant definitions.
In fact, hasn't the FTC cautioned that rules apply to a wide range of industries and entities, many of which might be unaware that they would be considered a, quote, financial institution or a creditor for purposes of those rules?
That's true, Matt. The term creditor is defined broadly, such that any business that regularly extends, renews, or continues credit, or participates in the decision to extend credit, or most importantly, defers payment for the goods or services and then bills customers later, they would be considered a creditor under the rules. So if your business meets the criteria for a creditor or a financial institution under the definitions provided by the rules, you have to then go to the second step, which is to determine whether you have a covered account. Now, the rule defines that term as either an account in which a consumer account, which is designed to permit multiple payments or transactions, or any other account that presents a reasonably foreseeable risk from identity theft. Even business-to-business accounts may pose a threat of identity theft and therefore would be covered, requiring you to develop and implement an identity theft prevention program.
That's true. So if you fall under the FTC's broad definition of creditor or financial institution, and you have a covered account, you must develop and implement a written program to detect and respond to the red flags of identity theft by taking into consideration the nature of your business and the risks you face and update your program periodically.
Yes, and the deadline for compliance is June 1st, 2010.
Now, I know there are a number of federal statutes that address security more broadly. Let's briefly discuss some of the regulated industries there.
Well, there are several provisions in statutes relating to certain regulated industries, such as financial services or healthcare. So, for example, for financial services, we have the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Financial Services Modernization Act, or GLBA, and that includes the safeguard rules that implement the security requirements and require financial institutions to have reasonable policies and procedures to ensure the security and the confidentiality of customer information. Now, it requires financial institutions to implement a written information security program, and the program has to be appropriate to the company's size and complexity, of course, the nature and the scope of the activities, and finally, the sensitivity of the customer information it handles. Now, the final guidelines that we just discussed reflect what I think are careful thinking on information security, and therefore it really should be viewed as providing strong recommendations for companies that seek to create good data governance programs, and therefore avoid being held liable for deficiencies in information security.
Now, given the regulatory environment of the healthcare industry, there are security provisions there as well, right?
Yes. For the healthcare industry, there are security provisions in HIPAA, or the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. Now, as we know, HIPAA was enacted as a result of increasing concerns over security of computerized healthcare information, and it impacts all organizations within the healthcare industry, as well as those who process or use any related information. Now, that could be healthcare plans, health providers, or organizations that process healthcare information, or healthcare clearinghouses. So HIPAA's security rule sets standards for the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of electronically protected health information, or what they like to refer to as EPHI, for personal healthcare information. Now, such healthcare information includes information relating to a person's past, present, or future physical or mental health or condition.
And what about more general federal security laws?
Well, many may be surprised to know that Sarbanes-Oxley, or SOX, has a Section 404 which has been interpreted to require information security practices for public companies. As you may know, SOX was enacted in response to a number of widely publicized corporate and accounting scandals. And in an effort to establish investor confidence, it mandates that corporate officers of public companies attest that the corporation's financial process is sound and that their financial data is accurate and complete. Now, SOX mandates internal control structure to monitor the company's financial reporting procedures. And while Section 404 and its implementing rules don't specifically require IT security, there is general agreement that as a practical matter, compliance necessitates adequate IT security. So, for example, Matt, as to the effectiveness of internal controls, it requires disclosure of material weaknesses. One major issue relating to security in terms of SOX is that the implementation of a new IT system and upgrades, which oftentimes can introduce new risks and vulnerabilities, can lead to those material weaknesses. So it's important for management to verify whether the company implemented IT systems controls, whether the controls contain significant deficiencies, and if so, whether such deficiencies affect other controls to the extent that the financial reporting is somehow potentially inaccurate or misleading. And those responsibilities really exist even if the functions have been outsourced to a third-party service provider. So obviously, compliance with SOX is costly and burdensome, but the implications of non-compliance are severe and the potential for prison term and or fines.
So given the discussion of all what we've talked about here, it's pretty clear that compliance with the array of security laws, both at the federal level and the state level, requires a thorough understanding of the ever-changing legal landscape. Thank you for your time, and look for our other podcasts on various aspects of IT law.